Welcome back to the show. My next guest is Paul Van Ward. He's an interdisciplinary cosmologist and an independent scholar, and he's joining me to talk about his latest book, Children of a Living Universe, Discovering Our Legacy Will Change Our Future. He's addressing the question, where are we in the evolutionary trajectory of our species? We will discuss that with Paul Van Ward when we come back. Welcome back to Coast AM. This is Lisa Garr, and joining me is Paul Van Ward. He is an interdisciplinary cosmologist. He is the author of his latest book called Children of a Living Universe, Discovering Our Legacy Will Change Our Future. Welcome to the show, Paul. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be with you.
Yeah, me too. I'm really interested in the title of your book, Children of a Living Universe. First of all, let's talk about the word living universe. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, I think humans for probably, several hundred years and maybe even thousands of years, that we were the only spark of life in the universe. And particularly in the 20th century, you know, science has had the perception, I think, that, you know, this is the only planet that was fertile enough to produce life. And we are the product of the Big Bang. Well, you know, I think that's a very limited view of reality. I think we've begun to understand that we are probably not the sole conscious species in the universe. And not only are we not the single conscious universe area in our little galaxy here and around our sun, that we probably have cousins in many, many parts of the universe. As you know, we've discovered in the last few years literally hundreds of exoplanets that are going around stars and the universe in every direction that we look for them. And we're a very young species. If you think about the universe for 15 billion years of age, and we've only been self-aware on this planet for about 200,000 years. I mean, you know, during that 15 billion years, obviously other life forms have grown up on many, many planets and perhaps even in other forms or other dimensions. So that's one point that I'm trying to make in terms of thinking of our universe as a living universe. But I think it even goes deeper than that,
mm-hmm.
that we're not talking about just life in humans and species like we experience on this planet. I think the more we learn about the universe, its design, its principles that are obvious to any scientist or any observer to see how the mechanism of the universe works. And it suggests that you know, it is an organism of its own, that the whole universe is not just a sort of physical object in some even greater sphere of space. It's that the universe itself, the way it functions, it seems to have its own mind, its own intentions. And so I think we can talk about the universe in terms of, you know, a self-aware universe, one that is self-actualizing, that is conscious and evolving to reach a point of its own full self-fulfillment. And I'm using those words, you know, that we use about ourselves as humans, but I think that it's not unreasonable to think that the whole universe is alive. and we are part of that organism.
I think it's interesting that you use the word children in the title. It seems almost like what you're talking about here in terms of our species or the evolutionary species that we are, that we're more the tweens. And when you get into that pre-adolescent stage, you start to make bad decisions, mistakes, destructive decisions. And then you relate that basically to our legacy here. Are we going in a constructive direction or a destructive direction? What do you think?
Well, I think we are going in a self-destructive direction, I think, at this point. And I think about it in terms of adolescent boys, you know, who are unconscious of their own fragility, their own potential of hurting themselves or hurting other people or taking actions that, they don't care what they do to the environment around them, the other people around them. It's self-centered
kind of
behavior.
Center of the universe type of behavior. Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we're sort of in that situation. I think of the evolutionary trajectory, you know, of all species, that we do seem to appear to start out in much more simple, not such a complex organism, and then as we progress in complexity, and we can talk about the fact that maybe we've had some help along the way, maybe there have been interventions in the human trajectory, but certainly right now, regardless of where we are in our own trajectory, I think we are children in terms of the time that we have been around in the universe, a very short period of time. We are possibly just one of one dimension of what we call life. And I think that if we look at the evidence that we have now in terms of consciousness and our historical narratives, I mean, you go back to, all of us are familiar with the Bible, the Hindu text.
Ancient civilizations. Mm-hmm.
All of these texts have suggested that there are other beings, and I call them ABs, advanced beings. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of those species are obviously much more developed than we are. If you look back at the ancient texts that a lot of people now are writing about and talking about, we understand that it's more than just interplanetary travel that some other species may have achieved. They also understand the universe, able to perhaps traverse different dimensions. We've talked about in a lot of the discussions people are having during this new century about wormholes and, mm-hmm. and other
black holes, mm-hmm, other portals.
Moving throughout mm-hmm. the universe.
Let's talk a little bit about those ancient societies and about some of those civilizations, about where they went wrong and what we can learn from that. What are some of the more recent discoveries that we've found from ancient artifacts and so forth that talk about what we've learned?
Well, we can, I think, learn a number of things. We have to think about these ancient cultures, and I want to talk about not what we might have done to ourselves, but also what the universe and its cycles might have affected us, too. But let's think about Well, I know we don't have solid details, evidence of some of the cultures, starting with Atlantis or Mu or Lemuria. Or there are many different, you know, cultures that we have different names for, and that we might be thinking about the same one civilization, and it's been given names by different cultures. But let's just say for discussion at this point that we had a civilization that we would call Atlantis. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a good bit of material that points to such a high civilization about 200,000 years ago, and that it had all kinds of technology in terms of different forms of energy, different forms of transportation, that you had a culture of political institutions, social classes, and so on, that had a rather positive society. But at some point, that culture disappeared, and we are not sure when it actually disappeared, but it's certainly about 10,000 to 15,000, 20,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we could say that some of that technology was used to perhaps cause the island of Atlantis to actually destruct itself. On the other hand, there's a possibility that we had near misses of other bodies passing so close to the Earth that it caused a global cataclysm. And so I don't think we can say with certainty that they were responsible for the destruction of that civilization. That is, the humans who were there, and I think that there also were other species involved in that civilization. But we do know, we have so much evidence about the cataclysm about 11,500 years ago, that it was a total around the Earth episode of all kinds of violent activities.
Not necessarily driven by the beings, but more so you're talking about environmentally?
Well, I think that the evidence might be strong enough to say that it was not by the beings. Beings were using technology. I mean, we have evidence, for example, on two or three parts of the planet that there were atomic weapons, and we know that there were explosions enough compared to our own atomic weapons in the period of World War II. We see the same evidence that you have in the testing fields where we were developing our own bombs. And we have that in India, we have it in the Middle East, we have it in northern Africa. So that would suggest that it was a very climatic event in terms of the explosions of these weapons.
So would we have anything to learn from this?
Well, I think we learn two things. One is to pay attention to nature itself and our impact on nature. And I think if you want to put it in current terms, we know that the cycles of our planet has had all kinds of very powerful shifts. We've had the ice ages, we've had the seas rising and then receding. Those are cycles that are geophysical cycles on the planet that seem to be a natural process. But what we, I think, learned from some of these earlier civilizations, and I think we're seeing it right now happening, that the activities of humans are exacerbating their piling on more than would normally occur. And let's take the example of the rising of the seas. By our own emissions into our own atmosphere, we can bring about a much more destructive level of the rising of the seas, of the changing of the climate. You know, it has naturally changed many, many times.
Right.
But when
history.
You do it so quickly, within a century or two, or as it seems to be right now, in, even in a few decades, where we're seeing now these effects. And so,
yes, at a faster rate with a higher population density. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And what we've built around the coast of our continents, all of them. So anyhow, it should be very clear to most people that we are having an effect on our own destruction of our current geophysical situation.
And so what you want to talk about here is how discovering our legacy will change our future. What is it about our legacy that we're discovering, and what is it that you suggest?
Yeah, well, we need to go back into these ancient cultures and look at what might have happened to them. Destructions of the monumental cities and the numbers of civilizations around the globe. I mean, we have evidence, you know, in the Andes and in the Middle East, and Egypt is one of those
examples. Still being discovered, yes.
And you have the Indus River Valley civilizations. I mean, we have the records there, the remnants of the civilizations that were in that part of the world. We do know from their own narratives that some of the history, some of the texts have described the wars and the conflicts that the humans wrought on themselves. So you've got this idea of our destruction of the natural environment with our warfare, and also the
outer environment.
Yes.
Absolutely. So in this balance that we're learning from from ancient civilizations and even future, you know, civilizations and the frontier science, what we're learning here is a general overall view of an increase in consciousness around all of this. And this is what I love to talk with you about, is how we can, you know, really find what this means about a self-guiding, self-learning universe and your idea of a new cosmology. And that's what I want to know about. Just touch on that a little bit. We're going to go to a break in just about a minute. But what do you mean by the new cosmology here?
Okay, well, we can just start on it here and then talk about it a little bit later. But cosmology happens to be a fancy word for something that is really nothing more than a worldview or a set of beliefs about the nature of reality. And it's the scientific and the religious split that we have on our planet at this point in time that is really holding us back to keep us from rationally and generally as a culture to look at our impacts on what we're doing to ourselves.
So this is, we're going to take that break, and we're going to find out what you mean by that, about how to either understand science, understand religion, or just basically transcend both and discover that they're both limited. We will be right back. My guest is Paul Van Ward, and this is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. And my guest is Paul Van Ward. His book is Children of a Living Universe. In the book, he says, now is the time to realize that the major responsibility for the survival of the Homo sapiens on planet Earth is largely in our own hands. And at this point, we are the greatest danger to the planet's ecosystem unless we learn how to balance our interactions between humans and other species and honor the planet's physical integrity. And we're going to continue to come back with Paul as he discusses the trajectory of our future, of our species. We'll be right back. This is Lisa Gar. You're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. My guest is Paul Van Ward, and we were talking before the break about how humans and the Earth are in worse shape due to the split of religion and science. Can you explain that?
Well, I think that what we have is sectors of our society who are so focused on their own particular beliefs about the nature of the universe and our place in it, so that we are not looking at the big picture and any area of discussion about our future and the problems that we're facing. In the religious belief systems, who have a cosmology that I would call simply a supernaturalism, which means that belief in that worldview, it gives people the feeling that they are being taken care of by some other force, other power, so that we don't have to have any responsibility for it. As long as we believe in that God or that idol or that spirit, which is a supernatural idea that it's something separate from nature, the natural life of the universe, and that we will be taken care of regardless of what we do on this planet or what happens on this planet. So when people have those belief systems, they absolve themselves of any responsibility to make sure that the future for our own generations to come is not their responsibility.
So no matter what we do, it doesn't matter because we'll be taken care of and everything
It'll
will
be taken care of either. Yeah, in a positive way or in a negative way.
Okay.
And then in science, what we have at this point in time is that our scientific community is really focused on the physical, the material aspect of the universe. And I think that we all can understand at this point in time that we're not just living in a physical material universe. I mean, in terms of our consciousness, in terms of the contact communications that we've had with more advanced beings, that we've had communications to many people living today from other voices and other parts of the universe that are either very specifically communicating with us about details or at least giving us the insight that we are not alone. We're not just on this one lonely planet, that we are involved in this larger community. Mm-hmm. So we're ignoring all of that in our scientific community.
So neither science nor religion really are on the mark.
That they're really looking at it in a very
limited,
mm-hmm. and I would say contrary perspective. So what I've been trying to do in writing this book and and talking about a new cosmology is that we really have to have the two parts of our society, what I call the physical material orientation and the supernatural orientation, and there's another group of I think people in the middle of that, and then I think that they are what I would call magical thinking, you know, to say that, oh, well, we don't have to solve this problem today. If we can just get the intention in our mind, or we have sense that if we do our meditations and our rituals,
everything's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay, too, because we have the power, you know, to change the cycles of nature. And so what I'm trying to communicate here is that these different worldviews, these different cosmologies, we need to get together and look at our assumptions, look at the evidence that we have, and try to come up with a consensual view of what this planet is all about and how we fit into the bigger picture.
What instead, then, do we come up with? What do you call that?
Well, I call that, you know, the conscious living universe, and that we are as responsible for our part of the universe as other life forms are in other parts of the universe, and that we've got to think of ourselves as responsible to the degree that we have the power to change the course of our lives. And, of course, that's a question of choice. And what we are afraid to do, I think, as a human species, we are afraid to realize that the trajectory that we're on is going to lead us to perhaps one of these global cataclysms again.
So you're saying basically that we're acting irresponsibly as children, basically.
That's right.
Because the religion is not being responsible. The science is not being responsible. The magical thinking is not being responsible. So this replacement model of responsibility, what does it look like?
Well, it looks to me that what we have to do is to go back into history in terms of our academic and our research activities and our educational institutions and our research institutions, to go back and look at the myths of the past and try to discern how many of those stories and how many aspects of those stories that we were talking about that, you know, come to us from the Hindus and the Egyptians and the Hebrews and all of the
ancient civilizations,
all of the civilizations, and not only the civilizations, but our Aboriginal groups of people who lived more closely to nature than we are living, you know, in our modern world.
Very detached from nature.
Absolutely, because we have so many of these Aboriginal groups, Native people in different parts of the universe. They have come to terms with the relationships that they have with nature, which we've sort of let go in our modern technology and our modern world of materialism. So we've got to look back on our own history and try to figure out what is myth and what is history. And I think the history is very strong, that we have had advanced interventions in our cultures in the past, and that we have also ourselves had institutions at different periods in our history where we were democratically working together, that we had a sense of community, we had a sense of one people, because all of the conflicts that we're having right now are
those of division.
Apparently, you know, this is in the last couple of thousand years that we have some of that conflict going on prior to that, but we don't have the kind of hostility and the wars and
divisiveness. I mean, we're really
divisiveness at every level. Mm-hmm. You know, it's economic, mm-hmm. It's physical, it's social, it's territorial. And
the only
we're
thing
seeing
that
ourselves
isn't...
as a whole group of people who have no common ideal.
The only thing we're really not divided on, though, is those topics of the environment. There seems to be a universal understanding of the fact that our environment is in trouble. And it's the one thing that over 2 million, I think, environmental organizations exist around the world. Although they're not the same organization, they're different, 2 million different organizations. But that seems to be the only one thing that we're united on.
Well, see, I agree with you on that in terms that, that we have these groups and we have citizen groups and private groups, but what you have is the counterweight of corporations, military, interest. These are institutions that what I put in the materialistic people who are only concerned about the present and their own interest, and so we do have that gap between us in that regard. But I think you're right in terms of these volunteer groups who are working on the environmental issues are also likely to be addressing some of these same questions of, you know, what are we as a species? That they're having to cross bridges, cross the divides of religions, cultures, economic groups, and so on. I think it's not totally too desolate at this point, but I think that we've got a lot of work even in that area.
Yep, absolutely. You've mentioned the word ABs, advanced beings, for a couple of times here, and you're known for your hypothesis on ABs and their intervention in human development. Explain a little bit about advanced beings, in your opinion, and how you think they might be able to help.
Well, that's a possibility. I use the term advanced beings only to indicate that there are species who have technologies and knowledge and skills more advanced than humans. And I go back to, you know, the ancient aliens that we talk so much about these days. These are species of beings who are more advanced technologically and in some degrees, I think, more developed socially and culturally. But I think that we have to use terms differently than the ones we had in the past, which is using terms like angels and devils and demons. And you know, these terms put us in a different category than those beings. And what I'm trying to do is, by saying advanced beings, ABs, is that they are part of the community of conscious species, and we're one of those species. We just don't have the technologies of space travel, for example, or dimensional travel, interdimensional travel. So to the extent that they are more advanced in that area, I call them ABs. It's not necessarily always the case that they are more positive in their social norms and customs, because we have a lot of stories, a lot of evidence from individuals over the last half a century of contact with more advanced beings, and some of them are positive and some of them are negative.
You do cite many examples of these, and I'd love you to share some of them with us, some of the evidence.
Well, obviously we have, in the current era, we have many, many groups, and you can, you know, choose your book that we use terms like contact, abductions. We have schools. We have one group of people that I have researched over some period of time are young people who seem, or they report to have, and I think that they are telling the real story, that they have been taken into other vessels or in another dimension to talk to the young children about all kinds of issues.
Can you tell us that group?
I'm sorry?
Can you tell us that group, the name of that group?
Well, no, I can't. I think it is several.
Oh, a collective group. Okay, I see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in other words, let's take several cases of people who go, they report themselves being taken into sort of another dimension, where they are picked up in some sort of, and the reason I can't generalize, because, you know, when you have these people who've had these experiences, they are not all the same. It has, I think, something to do with their initial perception of the kind of being. Some of them are very frightened, and others come back from that experience feeling
enlightened,
positive. They feel honored that they've learned something. And what we're doing as a culture is we're ignoring that. We don't have any sort of official institutional way of collecting the data, the material that they learned, their insights. We're not trying to treat that as a universal kind of experience. Now, you're probably aware of John Mack's work before he died, talking to people with these various contacts and relationships with other beings. And he was attempting to bring this aspect of life in this world and look at it from an academic, from a research, rational way of trying to make some sense of that experience. We have a lot of people who are in various groups today. We have conferences probably one or more a month.
Uh-huh, absolutely. George is there right now.
Mm-hmm. They're there. I'm speaking to some of them from time to time, you know, to talk about this. But we don't have, but this is sort of a piecemeal way to deal with it.
It's kind of like the environmental movements. There's 2 million around the world, but they're not all in one place. There are UFO conferences all over the planet, but not all in one place. They're all saying the same things, though. So it is definitely a phenomena, and there are, you know, reports of intelligent non-human beings every single day. So what we want to talk about when we come back is what these advanced beings have to teach us and how this could help with the trajectory of our species. We will be right back with my guest, Paul Von Ward. I'm Lisa Garr. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.